Welcome to the 51st Gooner podcast, recorded 8 days after the final game of the season. I'm your host, Joe Broadfoot, and the panellists are David Udo, Steve Ashford and Mike Francis. Here's the rest of what they had to say.
Right about now, we've got some emails from listeners, and I'm going to read the first one, dated March the 5th. It's about the Almunia injury, and it's from Chris Highland, and he writes, I was listening to the latest podcast as I was walking the dog, and I heard the comments about Almunia being dropped under the pretense of illness. I know it's not a recent thing, but as I came up in the podcast, I thought I'd forward this article I came across earlier, coincidentally in brackets. It should provide the answer to his 3 to 4 week absence. The article about keeper being given time off entitled Almunia Coping with Family Tragedy, which equals specifically the death of his mother-in-law in a car crash. As for Almunia, I like him a lot. I think he gets unfair stick. I'll admit that sometimes it is justified. In my opinion, we have one of the better keepers in the league. Not many come above him, and the price of a world-class keeper is beyond us. Where and how do we get a keeper good enough to replace him? Anyway, I say stick by him. I love the podcast. Keep up the good work.
Right. If I may...
I think we're going to have to say something on this.
We made the comments about Almunia being off for 4 weeks with a running bum. About 2 weeks after we did that podcast, Wenger revealed he'd been out after his mother had died in a car crash. And that's obviously a horrible thing. And
but how many years ago did that happen, wonder?
No, it was
actually recently.
Yeah. It was just after the Manchester City game, by all accounts. That's very, very sad and everything. And
better excuse than a wrist injury that wasn't even when the wrist was in the stretch up.
This is the thing. I mean, with regard to the other point Chris has made, where can we get a goalkeeper better than him? I can think of 16 in the Premier League, probably 30 worldwide. Pick a name out of the hat, with the exception of Boaz Myhill and Brian Jensen, I'd take pretty much any other goalkeeper. I mean, Tottenham have got two goalkeepers better than us, in Cudicini and Gomez.
Except one of them has a bloody hand, so...
I'd still take him over Almunia. In fairness, the punch you can get off a stump, it's really long. So, I'm obviously incredibly sorry for Manuel's loss. I'm certain he can go back to Spain and be closer to his family next year whilst playing for Huelva or Sabadell or whoever in the Spanish Segunda Liga will take him.
Well, I think it's quite sad about Manuel, actually. I had high hopes for him when he first came in, but I mean, he's not proved to be a big gamekeeper, and every year he gets a little bit worse.
He's had one good season, though, Steve. This season just passed, but the one before, I think he surpassed expectations.
He's a good shot stopper. I mean, I think he's a good shot stopper. That he's reading of the game, he's knowing when to come off the line. To a certain extent, his handling of crosses is not brilliant. And I reckon that letter must have been written 4 years ago.
You forgive a 20-year-old, you don't forgive a 32-year-old.
Yeah. I suppose we should point out that the letter was actually written back in March, and due to some technical problems, it's taken a while to reach us.
But did he have a good run of form at that point? Because it's not in my mind.
There are many better keepers, and we don't know where we get a better one. As David says, I mean, apart from maybe Boaz Myhill, I'd take any one of the other 19.
Would you take Paul Robinson? He's been
based on current form. I'd take him.
Oh, really?
I'd take Mrs. Robinson. Robinson's barley water.
But we're pleased you like the podcast, Chris. So
yeah, we're very happy about
that. That's the important thing.
So, the next email, should we go to you, Steve?
From a guy called Steve Dahlgren from Alexandria, Virginia in the USA. So he's coming all the way from over there, and thanks for listening again, Steve. He says, hello chaps, I'm a big fan of the podcast, and one of my favourite parts of it are the songs. Living in the USA as I do, I have to watch Arsenal on the TV, and I can't always make out the words to the songs sung by the crowd. Keep singing, lads. Well, you'll be pleased to know, Steve, there are no songs tonight. Sorry about that.
Sorry, Steve, my bad, I left the guitar home.
Yeah, it's a technical fault.
But thanks for the email.
Another email from a previous writer, Chris Christou, who Mark Ollington addressed personally about 3 or 4 podcasts ago. Chris writes, thanks for mentioning me on the podcast. What an honour. You were right. I should. Fuck off. Keep up the good work and less of the shite songs. Nice one, lads, and thank you. Well, Chris, much to your chagrin, unfortunately, there are no songs tonight. So it looks as though the people have spoken.
Yes. And so, finally, on the email front.
The final email we got was from John Harding from Hackney, who said, just to say well done for an awesome podcast I look forward to all week. Thanks for that, John.
Must have a headline.
Also, just want to ask what you think of Theo Walcott this season and his involvement or not in the first team. I mean, he's a really talented player who spends whole matches on the bench. I just can't get my head round why Wenger isn't playing him. I know he hasn't been brilliant from the little we've seen of him, apart from two similar and fantastic goals against Burnley and Barcelona, but the only way he'll recover is by playing regular first-team football. He's been injured and now he's been sidelined in a season where Arsenal's shown a lack of pace which he brings onto the field. Any ideas? P.S. The JT songs were brilliant. And well, John, the songs, I'm sure, were brilliant. Everyone enjoyed them. As for Theo, I'm sure we'll get the other panellists' views. My view is I'm afraid he's never going to make it. He's just not good enough. His decision-making has been is diabolical, and he may have pace, but that's about all he's
got. He's been played out of position. I mean, Arsene himself says that he's a striker, and then he plays him on a wing, which I really can't understand for the life of me.
I really, really, really do not understand this playing Theo Walcott out of position nonsense, because he patently and unnervingly is never ever going to be a striker as long as he lives, because if you've seen his finishing,
yeah, but what about Thierry Henry when he was the same age? How good was his finishing? Did you see, do you ever see his statistics before he arrived at Arsenal for goals? It wasn't very good. It was 1 in 3 at best, if I remember correctly.
Thierry Henry has got natural talent. Anyone, even Arsene Wenger, could see that. Thierry Henry had and still has natural, awesome ability. Theo Walcott has got pace, and that's all he's got. And I agree totally with Mike.
He's got a work ethic, which is something Thierry Henry did.
He's a winger. I'm not sure he does track back well enough. He gets back, but he doesn't make a tackle.
He definitely can't tackle. I'd agree.
His crossing always goes to the first man. He can't beat the first man.
I don't know. He's put a few crosses in the 6-yard box. And to be honest, I've seen our strikers, if that's what they are, or striker, because we normally play one up front, not bothering to even go into the 6-yard box.
Because
not just from Theo, by the way. We've put a lot of crosses at the edge of the 6-yard box, and there's no one there who's interested in scoring one of those dirty goals.
Okay, let's talk
we
about
only like got. Beautiful.
Would Walcott get in Chelsea's team or United's team?
I think he'd get into United's team in terms of the position that he plays and the way that the team he'd be in play. I mean, he's like Andre Arshavin in the sense that he doesn't fit in the team that he plays for. I mean, in this fluid 4-3-3 that we have, I mean, you need three Van Persies up front, which is why Bentner will only work when Van Persie's injured. I mean, the sheer nonsense of watching the tallest man in the squad stood on the right wing knocking in crosses for himself is something I hope you don't have to watch next season. But Walcott won't be able to play as a centre forward in a 4-3-3. You need somebody who can hold the ball up. I mean, the guy's 5'7" and quicker than shit off a stick. I mean, you put balls over the top for him to run onto. And Wenger, like Walcott's teammates, won't trust him to do that.
How many balls over the top? When you've got guys like Diaby, they will never put a ball over the top. Diaby is one of those guys who only ever plays to feet.
That's why I've got a bit of a thing with Diaby.
The other point I'll raise about Theo Walcott is that 2 years ago, at the age of 20, people wrote off Aaron Lennon as being no good, as having no end product, not scoring enough goals, not creating enough goals. Most people would now pick him in the England team ahead of Walcott and would say he's probably Tottenham's most dangerous player. Theo Walcott has only just turned 20 years old. He's soon to be 21. Christ, I mean, look how I was at the age of 20. You know, I was a completely different person in 100,000 different ways. If people want to write off players at the age of 23, 24, I think you've got more of a licence to do that. But the age of 20, I think you're asking far too much.
Well, I'm looking at players we have had in the past in that position. And I go back to George Armstrong, Peter Maranello, Liam Brady, Mark Overmars, Riggs, Pires, all of them. I mean, Theo Walcott is not fit to lace their boots.
Yeah, but at that age, when you compare the ages, Pires, how old was he? 28 at least, if not pushing 30, right, when he arrived at Arsenal. Overmars, he was late or mid-20s. Whereas Theo's been with us a while now.
I take all that on board, and I understand what David's saying about him only being 20. And if we'd seen any signs of improvement in the last 3 to 4 years, I'd say relevant point. But I just don't think we have. I think, he's been there 3 years now, and okay, he's had injuries and he's not had a run in the side and all that. You can argue all that. But when he is in the team, his decision making is still appalling.
Look at
I thought 3 years ago, I thought, oh, it will come, he'll learn that, he'll gain from experience. And it's not. It's so often. I mean, the Barcelona goal, what on earth was he doing? He was through on goal, he didn't have a man near him, and he tried to play in Bentner, who had two men on him. Somehow we managed to score a goal out of that.
And he's supposed to be a striker.
Decision. It was
a
wrong decision.
Yeah. Position. He's supposed to be a striker. Yeah. When he does get in the shooting position, he passes it or misses it.
That's down to lack of confidence. And if you play in the wrong position, you will start to lack confidence after a while.
2 minutes later,
and
that
Wenger should know that, because I thought he had some psychological ideas.
2 minutes
ideas.
Later in that Barcelona game, Diaby had the chance to play him in again. And, as you say, Joe, Diaby would only play him in defeat. But if Theo Walcott had finished the first one with confidence, I reckon Diaby would have played him in. But he didn't, and chance was gone. And
then he gets Fulham, the last game of the season, where, someone set him up one-on-one with the keeper, and you're thinking, go on, Theo, just for once, prove you're a striker. Hit the target and score, beat the man. He put it wide.
Yeah, we got off Bentner.
You're going, Theo again.
We got off Bentner 18 months ago for not being able to finish. And, we commented earlier about what a... just like a new signing is when he came back after injury. I mean, look, is he going to be as good as Robert Pires or Mark Overmars? Probably not, but they're two of the finest wingers I've ever seen in my life. But at the age of 20, I'd like to see what he's like when he's 23.
Yeah, I think he certainly deserves a lot more time.
I think he might be better in 4-4-2.
Oh, totally. He has to play the 4-4-2. Otherwise, he's like Arshavin. He could be the greatest winger in the world, but what's the point of having wingers in a 4-3-3?
Talking of tactics, which Wenger hasn't bothered to kind of, address over the last year.
So let's address what we talked about on the last podcast.
So let's address it for him. We didn't talk about 4-4-2 very quickly because I know we got other agendas. Would you be in favour of going back to 4-4-2 at any stage, mate? Mike?
Depends on the players, doesn't it? I mean, you've got to play a formation that's going to work for the players, and 4-3-3 wouldn't have been my first choice, and I'm surprised Wenger went for it because he was very rigid with 4-4-2 for a long time. But what it has delivered this season is the best season we've seen from Cesc. What has worked for him. You can say that the other 10 players it hasn't worked for, but it's a balancing act, isn't it? I'd say Cesc is good enough. He could play in pretty much any formation, but the fact he's scored 18 goals.
Yeah, when you look at it, we've sort of overachieved given the players that we've had at our disposal. We've done quite well to finish third.
I think Mike's made a very good point. I mean, the 4-3-3 frees Fabregas, and as he's our best player, that makes a lot of sense. Added to the fact it seems to have brought out the best in Robin van Persie as well. The issue that I would have is the last sort of 8 games of the season that Fabregas was ruled out for. If you don't have that player, and however good Sami Nasri is, he's not Cesc Fabregas. You are allowed to change the formation. Again, it's not cheating to make the most of what you've got.
And why didn't he go 4-4-2 for the Wiggins, for the Blackburns, for the Spurs game, for instance, when Fabregas was injured, and maybe play Eduardo and Van Persie up front, or Vela and Van Persie? Just give him a chance. I mean, Eduardo wasn't given a chance all last season.
I can't really blame Wenger for that, to be honest. The few glimpses I've seen of Eduardo this season... Yeah. I really could understand why Wenger's so reluctant to put him on.
I think
even
sadly, Eduardo's the injuries finished him, isn't it?
18th of February 2008, yeah, day the music died.
It's never going to be the same time.
Which kind of brings me on in a roundabout way to the Gunnar survey. The deadline.
Seamless parking.
It was sort of semi seamless, but I'm sort of going a bit forwards to go backwards, if you don't mind me doing that. Because I was thinking about the most disappointing player of the season. We'll get onto that in a minute. But one of the things about the Gunnar survey is there's a deadline, the 18th of June. That's Friday, the 18th of June is a deadline for that. And first of all, we're going to talk about the player of the year before we start talking about the most disappointing player of the year. And the contenders for player of the year, Cesc Fabregas, Alex Song and Thomas Vermaelen. So,
okay, just on the survey, if you do want to fill it in... there's a link to it online. The survey appeared in the last issue, but you can also go to the website www.onlinegunnar.com and you'll see a link at the top of the page As Joe said, deadline is Friday the 18th of June, and this is your chance to have a say. Whether anyone will listen to it at the club or not is another matter, but there you go.
Are you allowed to say who you're voting for in this survey?
I'll probably reveal who I have done in my survey. I've completed my survey before we got too many answers in, so I wasn't influenced by everyone else. Player of the season. It's difficult, as you say.
It's a tough choice.
You've got Fabregas, Vermaelen and Song, I think, are really the only three realistic contenders. I'm sure we'll get another couple. Sol may come in as a late season. I think Arshavin won it last year, despite only joining in January, so there is precedent for that. My vote has to go to Cesc, just because he's the player that makes the difference whenever he's on the pitch. Vermaelen, I think, had a good first season. He had a great first 2 months. I do think he went off the boil a bit after that. Certainly didn't get as many goals, but that's not what he's there for. But and Song has come on leaps and bounds and is now such an important player, but I still have to say Cesc is the one that gets you off your seats.
Yeah, I agree with that. Cesc was responsible for a majority of the goals we scored, and he made a majority out of the other goals. So, I mean, talk about a one-man team as far as scoring goals. It was Cesc.
Cesc
for me every time. Yeah.
I mean, I think our season was encapsulated by the Aston Villa home game. An hour of sort of fucking around, not really knowing what we're doing. Fabregas can barely walk. Wenger takes it to one side and says, "Cesc, can you go and score two goals and come back off again?" "Yeah, no problem, boss." "Yo, bish bash, thanks. Can I go back?" "Yeah, no problem. That's great. There's your win bonus. Cheers, thanks." Yeah, he's best player by a mile.
He is the best player, but he's my favourite player. But does that mean he deserves Player of the Year? Because he could be playing within himself. He's that good.
They are just our opinions, Mr. Quizman.
I think when we come on to the next one, sometimes it's about what your expectation is.
Yeah, my expectation of Cesc is I expect him to be our best player every match, because he's that good.
I think he exceeded most people's expectations this season. You know, as we said earlier, the formation suited him and he milked every moment of it.
Yeah. Can I just ask a question to Mike while our revered owner, come proprietor of the Gooner, is here? Do you reckon the players and the directors read the Gooner, Mike?
No.
They
don't? No. Well, we did the interview with Cesc in issue 194, still available from the website. Seamless plug. Unlike issue 195, which is now, or 205, which is now nearly sold out.
Yeah.
Anyway, Cesc, actually, we asked him in an interview, said about the Gooner, and he had to be prompted, you know, by holding up a magazine saying, "This is the Gooner." "Oh yeah, I've heard of it." "No, you hadn't, Cesc. Just admit to it."
Because I met Ray Parler once, and I told him I wrote a column for the Gooner, and he said, "What's the Gooner?" And that was only about 7 or 8 years ago, and the Gooner had been going for 20 years at that time.
I mean, David Dean, when David Dean was there, you know, and for all his faults, many of which there are, he did read it. You know, he was
to the point he threatened litigation against you.
I think we probably had a couple of threats, nothing quite as bad as some of the other fanzines, admittedly, but we may have overstepped the line, but quite as much as they did.
There's no chance of Arsene Wenger reading it.
Not a hope in hell.
He didn't read anything, does he?
Wouldn't you think that you would want to read that to find out what the result of your job
and me
is
would, yeah. We're not Arsene Wenger, are we?
According to the fabulous Arsenal and Making of a Modern Super Club by Alex Flynn and Kevin Witcher, the only two things Arsene Wenger reads are the Daily Mail and L'Equipe.
The Daily Mail? Oh, wow. What can I say?
I didn't see that coming,
I have to say.
Did you see that cartoon in the Sun the other day? No. With the Titanic sinking.
Oh, yeah, they had the picture of Wenger from Old Trafford, didn't they?
Wenger was standing with his arms
outstretched
on a lifeboat.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cesc was going away in the other one.
Wasn't over the top at all.
Anthony Castriakis.
Who's a Liverpool fan.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the most flagrant Liverpool fan in the world. What's it like writing for The Sun, Anthony? Being a Liverpool fan. He brings out the Arsenal sinking, Cesc leaving story every year if you search through his profile on the Sun's website.
Oh wow!
Good cartoon, though. I quite enjoyed it, I must say.
So yes, we've been talking about something disappointing, the idea of Cesc leaving. What about the most disappointing player then? And there's a lot to choose from. We've got Almunia. These are the ones that I'm just going to read out, if you excuse me. Almunia, Fabianski, Arshavin, Diaby, Danilson, Rosicki, Eduardo. There are other people.
It's like I said on the previous question, I think it's expectation.
Eduardo, we didn't have any expectations.
And there's a few there where, you know, Almunia, Fabianski, Danielson, Eduardo, Rizicki, I didn't even expect him to play a game. So
I think
he might be, you know, most player of the year on the basis that he actually managed to play 30-odd games. Arshavin and Diaby for me are the two there. Diaby, as I said earlier, I just find him the most frustrating player because I think he's got the ability, but his attitude will never allow him to use that ability to the full. And he'd be the first player on the list to go for me. But Arshavin as well.
Terrible season.
Had an awful season. He promised so much last year, didn't he? And we all thought we'd got a real star. And I mean, I know there's a lot of rumours that he's not happy with his contract and this, that and the other, but he had a shocking season.
Yeah.
I'll go along with that. I mean, the question is worded, most disappointing player. I mean, I'm not disappointed by Almunia or Danielson as they delivered exactly what I expected. If the question was worst player, it has to be Manuel Almunia, as the guy who's only ever... He's a Spanish guy who spent 12 years playing in Spain and only played two games in Primera Liga for Getafe.
But what about Fabianski? I mean, Fabianski's
performances... He's a reserve goalkeeper. He didn't deliver anything, more or less, and I'd expect from a reserve goalkeeper age 22.
Dropping a cross in the net.
The question is most disappointing player.
He's a reserve. You are right about that.
He's a £12 million Russian international captain.
Yeah.
Who delivered a brilliant 6 months. I think we're entitled to expect the well from him, and he delivered fuck all. I think he signed for Arsenal on the basis that, you know, I'm going to be playing Champions League for a glamorous side, I'm going to be on the telly every week, Russia are going to be in the World Cup, do my 18 months there, go to Barcelona and have a great time. At the end of his first 9 months at Arsenal, catastrophe. Russia don't qualify for the World Cup, going out to Slovenia. Arsenal look as though they're going to win fuck all. Shit, I'm stuck here for the next 3 years. Bollocks. And I think the guy's, you know, fucking miserable, to be honest.
Is there an argument that his form actually went down once Russia went out of the World Cup?
Yeah, totally. He said himself, you know, I fell out of love with the game and had to rekindle that romance. So
I'm not sure it was that great in the first half of the season, to be honest.
Don't you think our glorious manager should kind of put that kind of thing right, in the same way that maybe Mourinho...
He does it. Well, yeah, he should be. He doesn't do confrontation.
Do you remember when Wenger said that he's economical? He said that about Arshavin quite early on, because I always thought he's never going to sign Arshavin, because he said in the summer, prior to the winter when he signed him, he said, I'm not really interested in Arshavin because he's not suitable for English football, or words to that effect. And then he goes and signs him.
Maybe the board signed him. There was rumours to say that the board signed him.
There was a lot of rumours. I mean, Wenger's also said memorably this season about Drogba, that Drogba doesn't do anything in the game apart from score goals against us.
Yeah. You know, that's quite a major part.
Arshavin not doing anything in the game if he scored more goals. Yeah. Although I would say, I believe somebody told me today that he was our second highest Premier League goal scorer behind Cesc.
Mm.
I know Van Persie was obviously out for a long time injured, but
I'm
still quite surprised.
How did he get
that?
3, 10, 4, 10
in the Premier League? Yeah.
I couldn't tell you more than 3 of them.
No, well.
I think, well, if you look, I imagine 8 of them came before Christmas.
I could never give him the most disappointing award, though. No, I mean, because I love to see him playing in the Arsenal kit, even now. I know he's had a disappointing season by his standards, but when you look at clowns like even Almunia, Fabianski, I mean, how he's played as many games for Arsenal that he has, I will never know. And even Diaby, everyone keeps telling me that he is a good player, but I've yet to see it in more than, say, two consecutive games. He's managed to do it, put on reasonable performances. That's not good enough.
Yeah.
Danielson had a good start to the season, and Rizicki, well, he's had his injuries, so you've got to forgive him that. But Eduardo, I mean, is that disappointing that he's... It's disappointing for me that he's not managed to come back from his injury, but it was expected.
Wenger never played him, so it can't really be disappointing, because Wenger never gave him a chance. I mean, if Wenger had started him 4 or 5 games on the trot and he failed miserably, then you could possibly say he was the most disappointing player. But I don't even think he started a game, did he?
He started, not that many, but he must have started three, four.
He started plenty in that sort of gap before Christmas when Van Persie was injured and we didn't have anyone else to play up front.
He didn't do too badly, if I remember rightly.
But then he's been played out of position as well. Typical Wenger thing with this formation that he sometimes calls 4-3-3 that looks like 4-5-1 to me.
Vela was Eduardo, was the Stoke game. Stoke away, which obviously memorable for all the wrong reasons, but before Cesc got the penalty in the last minute, Eduardo had a chance, which before the injury, he'd have finished with his eyes shut and probably standing on the one leg that was still good. But this time he just dwelt a split second too long. And you thought, the tackle was coming in, he'd seen what had happened to Ramsey, he knew what had happened to himself. That's it, he's never going to be the same player, and the chance has gone.
Again, he's another player who's redundant in 4-3-3 as well. He's a penalty spot goal hanger. I mean, the best football he ever played for Arsenal was when he played up front with your archetypal big man who'd do all the hard work.
Adebayor
and Bentner. Mm.
They were a good partnership.
Yeah, him and Adebayor were just showing signs of getting to know each other, because Van Persie was out injured again just before Martin.
Well, wherever Adebayor is next year, there's no guarantee he's going to be at City, but whoever buys Adebayor, or if he stays at City, they could do a lot worse than sign Eduardo, stick him in as a one-time or, you know, part-time partner or whatever, because they did play well together, them two.
I'm not too sure. You know, I think Eduardo's finished, unfortunately. I wish I wasn't saying this, but I just think that it was such a horrific injury. It's one of those situations where even if physically he's okay, mentally he's never going to be okay after that kind of tackle that he sustained from Martin Taylor.
But I wouldn't put him most disappointing player purely and simply because of the injury.
Yeah, because of what?
What's your most disappointing player, Steve?
By a country mile, Danielson. Every time. Because he should be playing for Arsenal.
Well, what about Fabianski? I mean, Fabianski's displays. I know. Sorry, I've been through this a little bit, David, but I just felt I have to come back to it again.
Yeah.
It's just, I would really like to hear what everyone's views on Fabianski is, because I know he's had an awful lot of stick, and no Arsenal player should go through that from the fans.
I mean, they should be backed. About, you know, at the end of the day, he's a Polish international, isn't he?
But what's he ever done that justifies
that? Yeah, I think that says quite a lot about the Polish international goalkeeper.
They're not in the World Cup this year, are they?
Yeah, well, I wonder why that might be.
He's got quite a lot of caps as well.
Yeah.
It's over 20.
Yeah, but I don't
know.
He's not
a bad shot stopper, to be fair to him.
But that's
the best. He's produced a few good saves. But he's made some horrendous mistakes.
There's been stuff in the press, hasn't there, saying, like, well, you know, he's great in training. And it's like, well, maybe this is the clue, you know. We always say we never practice corners and crosses in training. There's your answer. We've never put him under pressure to catch anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he probably is brilliant in training because he's just got shot stopping and he's good at that.
And have we got two crap keepers because we've got a crap goalkeeping coach?
Well, this is the interesting thing. I mean, Arsene said himself recently, so I don't know goalkeepers and I take advice from other people. Well, I'd like to know who advised him that this chancer who plays in the Spanish second division, who's, you know, never played, who's only ever played two games in Premier League in his entire life, and that wasn't for Barcelona or Real Madrid, it was for a team that, you know, you have to pronounce whilst snorting. You know, told him that out of every goalkeeper available on the face of the planet, this guy is your long-term number one. Whoever that person who gave that advice was needs the sack.
Well, I don't think anyone did. I think, wasn't it? Mm. Bob Wilson was still there at the time and he said he's not good enough. And that, before you knew it, Bob was out the door.
Well, Bob Wilson and Ben fell out over Stuart Taylor, didn't they?
Wilson
said Stuart Taylor's going to be the England goalkeeper one day. And for my money, I mean, apart from one game against Liverpool when he probably should have come out and stopped a long ball over the top, that John Arnorisa ultimately finished, Stuart Taylor never let Arsenal down as far as I remember one game.
What about Alex Maninga? Alex Maninga, what was your take on him?
I loved him. Loved Alex Maninga.
Yeah, he's up against Stoke.
Still playing now in Germany.
I mean, I remember
he's
having a few
third
great
choice
games.
At Juventus.
Oh, Italy. Okay.
Yeah, I remember Maninga having a few great games. I remember the penalty shootout at West Ham in the Cup. Yeah. Fantastic, wasn't
it?
Man United away, where he made countless saves in that game, didn't he?
Yeah.
But he was another one that never convinced me. You know,
he got into the habit of herring out of his box and being made to look stupid. I mean, Tony Adams mentioned it.
We're talking about Fabianski now.
Yeah.
Well,
I know that felt like a Fabianski moment when you said about herring out of his box.
Well, I mean, you know, Chelsea semi-final last year is still rather vivid in the memory.
I know, I can't forget that. But I can forget the best goal of the season, unfortunately. There's loads of contenders, apparently, for the best goal of the season. I don't remember any of them very well. But there's the Cesc goal against Spurs. There's a Cesc goal against Villa, and there's also a Nasri goal against Porto, and any other goals that you'd like to mention. I can't remember.
In my research for the survey, I managed to find just about every goal we scored this season on YouTube, so I'm probably well placed to talk about these. The Cesc goal against Spurs, I'm sure we all remember that one. From the halfway line, 11 seconds after we went 1-0 up.
I do, actually.
I've said it to enough people. Well, I don't remember celebrating two goals that closely together ever before, and it showed me how unfit I was because I was shattered for about the next hour. The Cesc goal against Villa, there was two. There was obviously two where he came off the bench. The first one was a free kick, and the second one was where he got played in by Walcott. So everything I said about Walcott, I take back. He got played in by Walcott, which was where he injured himself and pulled his hamstring as he stretched to poke it past. Nasri's goal was probably the one people remember most because it was most recent. He beat about five men in the 5 minute
game.
Oh,
yeah.
Dribbled around them all and then smashed it in. However, for me, if I'm going to pick out a bit of a random one, I thought our best goal was Merida against Liverpool in the World Cup.
Yeah, funny enough,
strike, like a thunder
bolt. Yeah, absolutely, brilliant goal.
So nice for me, that was the one I voted for.
Well, my goal of the season is Adam Johnson for Manchester City against Sunderland.
That was a great goal. I remember
last
that funny
minute victory time.
It was a left foot curler, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
In the top corner.
There was four blokes on the line and the keeper, and he got it and he jumped underneath. That is probably one of the best goals I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But the best Arsenal goal. best Arsenal goal. I remember that.
He says very quickly, realizing Manchester City haven't got a podcast going yet.
Absolutely. If we're talking about
maybe
Merida,
we should sell this one.
They've got a mention.
I'll be very brief because I know time's short. Why the hell are we keeping Danielson and letting Merida go?
Merida's got freedom of contract.
Why did Danielson get all that playing time last year and Merida got zilch? Why is Jack Wilshere going to Bolton for next year and we're keeping Danielson? I'll say that and I'll now give you my best goal. It's going to have to be
political
the Nasri one against Porto.
It's going to be Danielson, isn't it?
No, it's the Nasri one against Porto.
The Nasri goal against Porto was the most skillful and best to watch. I mean, the most fun sitting where I sit behind the North Upper was Fabregas' second goal against Villa. But my favourite Arsenal goal of the year was Nicholas Benter away at Stoke. As good a header as you'll ever see. Perfect cross. Beat the defender with a perfectly timed jump and perfect centre forwards header. You sent it downward. Sent it looping back from whence it came beyond the goalkeeper's outstretched hands. He's the only player in the Arsenal squad who could have scored that goal.
Yeah, I agree. Brilliant goal. Brilliant goal.
Yeah, there was a lot of good goals out there, but it's only when you start talking about them, I start thinking the positive stuff.
I think we shortlisted about 15.
Well, you've got Arshavin's goal at Man United, at Liverpool.
Arshavin's at Liverpool, yeah. There was quite a lot to choose from, and Danielson did make it in there for the first goal of the season against Everton.
Yeah, good goal.
Yeah, he's good for the long-range pile drivers.
Yeah.
But Wilshere, should he stay or should he go?
Wilshere, God,
to Bolton next year.
He should stay, definitely.
But is he ready for a first team place? Yes. Me personally, I'd say maybe he needs another season.
I'm comparing to the season. I think Arsblog said it. That he should. We want him to have the season that Ramsey's just had, but without the injury. A sort of breakthrough season. Have him on the bench, coming on as an impact player, but you actually using him from the bench with the games. Yeah.
He's English and he's good. Is Wenger going to play him?
You let Rositsky go. If you let Rositsky go, you can accommodate him in the squad. If you keep Rositsky, you can't. Because you've got Nasri and Rositsky, both as impact substitutes in the squad ahead of Wilshere.
But Rositsky's very injury prone now.
But he's also captain of the Czech Republic, earns more money than Jack Wilshere, has a bigger ego. There's no way on God's green earth the manager will drop him to accommodate Wilshere.
But Wilshere's playing central midfield for Bolton, and they reckon he's been a revelation there. Well, he surely could play central midfield instead of Danielson or Diaby for us.
Well, in the formation we're playing currently.
I blame the manager.
We haven't spotted that one.
So, our manager, how many £10 million plus players is he going to bring in? Or
how many players is he going to bring in?
Even free transfers. Let's just throw it open.
One if we're lucky.
Do you know what?
I think we need?
I really wish that you didn't have to renew your season ticket until August the 31st, because I wouldn't renew it if we don't sign a keeper this year and a couple of decent midfielders and a centre half, then I wouldn't renew.
That'd be ridiculous. If Arsenal don't sign a keeper this season, well, I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, I know. They make all these noises between now and June the 1st. Well, we're going to sign players, we're going to sign this. Arsenal's got lots of money, this year it's going to be different, we're going to sign players. Trust me, everyone will use their season ticket June the 2nd, right, they're in now. Let's go back to square one again.
I mean, actually, I feel like phoning a number and calling the guys with the white jackets if he doesn't sign a goalkeeper of some description. Unless he's planning to use Chesney. That's the only thing. Which he can't, because he's too young.
The only experience he's had is in League One. The old Division 3,
And it's not the best experience.
As promising as he is, and the reports are glowing, then, but he can't you know, there's only one player that I remember was Casillas, wasn't it, when he broke into the Madrid team 17-18 or whatever.
But Chesney's no pretty good.
And I just don't see it happening. And I don't see Wenger giving him the opportunity, to be honest, because that wouldn't be his way.
I mean, Chesney's kind of intimated himself and said, I'm more than happy to go on loan again next season, but it has to be in the Championship or for a Premier League team. I mean, the kid's realistic. I mean, you mentioned Casillas, but I mean, let's be frank. I mean, the guy, as a goalkeeper, looking at other goalkeepers, for me, he's the outstanding goalkeeper of his generation. People talk about Buffon, but bear in mind, Casillas plays in goal for Real Madrid, who essentially played 1-1-8 as a formation. The guy's a fucking miracle worker. He's the best goalkeeper I've ever seen.
What about Buffon? Because of Buffon, apparently, he really is quite eager to move to the Premier League.
I'm pretty certain the far-right wing husband of Benito Mussolini's granddaughter will love our plethora of Franco-African players. Not for me.
No.
Now, talking about Chesney, going on loan to a Premiership club, much like Joe Hart has this year. Joe Hart's gone to a Premiership club this year on loan, Birmingham. Sean, done brilliantly, because they've got a better keeper at City, or a more experienced keeper. Shay Given. If Chesney goes on loan to, let's say, Birmingham, for instance, or, you know...
Oh, yeah, that's quite possible.
Does absolutely brilliantly. We've got Fabianski. Oh. How silly is Wenger going to look then?
You've just got to pray that's not going to happen, haven't you? Because, I mean,
that's why I'm not convinced Wenger's going to sign a goalkeeper. I think he might think, I'll let Chesney go on loan to a Championship or lower in the table Premier League club on the grounds that he's going to, you know, sink or swim, and I'll cross that bridge when I get to it. But for the time being, I'll muddle on, and that'll be it. I'll muddle on with Manone, Almunia, and
so
we've got
those three clowns.
Yep.
Someone like Birmingham gets Chesney.
Yep.
And he plays brilliant every week. We're rubbish. Wenger still hasn't signed a keeper. And it's another nail in the manager's coffin.
I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. I'm saying it's just a sneaking suspicion that's something you might do. And instead, spurge £50 million on a centre-half.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is we, you know, we don't know how much money there is, but we do need a goalkeeper. We do need one, two centre-halves.
But you've never heard Wenger admit that, have you?
No, I know. And you know, I'm a fan of Wenger, you know. I desperately want him to succeed. I desperately want him to get his contract renewed. But right now I wouldn't offer him a new contract, one, because I think Wolves finally come away from my eyes, and I'm like, last season we're in exactly the same position. We said these are the players we need, and last year he'll go out and buy them, and he didn't. And this year I'm thinking, why do I think this season is going to be any different than it was 12 months ago? We need exactly the same players that we did then. Why do I think Wenger's going to go and buy them? And I don't, I really don't, I'm not convinced now.
So you don't think he's going to get a goalkeeper? No goalkeeper of any description.
I think he might go and buy a goalkeeper, but I don't think it will be the
it'd be somebody under 18, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
No, I don't agree.
I think we're going to buy a player from, I don't know, not an international class goalkeeper. Someone who's maybe playing in France and is maybe the fourth or fifth best keeper in France.
Mikhail Landry, or someone like that.
Someone like that. You know, that we'll bring in.
Maybe it will be Sebastian Frey's year.
Yeah. So we've been waiting how many years? Six, is it?
I mean, what I want is Lloris from Leon.
Yeah, me too. Me too, that's my call.
You know, the speculation is that Leon wants something silly for him.
And he's going to buy Munich, I heard, at one stage. Yeah. But I don't think it's done.
He wants something silly for him. We're not going to play it. We won't win any trophies. End of story.
Probably right.
And so we'll be stuck with Fabianski and Almunia for one more season. So based on that, would you say Arsene Wenger's got too much power?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Have we got time for another podcast on that one?
Well, I think Mike's already said he podcast wouldn't necessarily special. Give Arsene a new contract. I mean,
I would not be offering him one now, but I can see why the club might be, because they want him to commit before we go and buy players on a long-term contract.
So the time, if we're going to offer it, has to be now,
probably
now or never.
Does. But you know, if he refuses to sign it, then what? You know, then we're backed into a corner where we have to say.
Mind you, though, shouldn't the club be bigger than the manager? And any player we're signing now should be signing for Arsenal, not Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, of course, but that's not the way it works, is it? Mm. You know, I mean, you bring in another manager next year, and the player might be quite happy to stay at Arsenal. Yeah. The manager might not want him.
But when a player signs for Chelsea, and I'm just playing devil's advocate now, if a player signs for Chelsea on a 4 or 5 year contract, the way they change their managers. There's no guarantee Ancelotti will be here after next season, but that wouldn't put a player off not signing for Chelsea.
Well, Steve, Chelsea don't go into appointing a new manager thinking that they're they're going to appoint them on a one-year basis, otherwise they'd give their manager one-year contracts. They don't. I mean, they have this bottomless pit of money, so they can sign managers on three-year deals, but sack them after the first year, safe from the knowledge they can just find £8 million in compensation to buy them off.
Yeah.
I mean, their intention is to keep managers long-term, and Ancelotti, if he wins the European Cup in the next 2 years, I'm sure he'll be Chelsea manager for as long as he wants to be.
And they tend to pay better than Arsenal anyway, right? In Ashley Cole's case, at least.
Well...
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not sure about generally. I really don't know.
In fact, I blame Abramovich and I blame Chelsea and everything to do with that awful club for all the ills in football at the moment, and particularly clubs like Portsmouth going bust and players like Hull being on the brink of bankruptcy, because they've all had to up their wage bill, they've all had to spend money they haven't got.
Yeah, but Arsenal have lived within their means,
well,
so we're told.
To an extent, but I mean, the players are still demanding the contracts, you know. I mean,
And guys like Diaby are getting them.
Yeah, and they're getting paid 60 grand a week or whatever, you know. It's just crazy money. But that's because they know that they can walk out the door and somebody else will give them it. Especially because they've had the Wenger schooling.
Well, I mean, if you go back to before Abramovich came, you know, it was a much more even playing field, particularly in salaries and... You know, the finances of clubs, you know, you look at Liverpool, they've gone bust trying to compete with Chelsea.
Mm.
And the likes of Chelsea and City can just spend money like it isn't there, and everyone else has to live within their means, go slightly over the top, and end up where Portsmouth are now. And I totally blame, you know, Abramovich for that, totally. So, which is why, you know, like most other football fans, when they win a trophy, you know, I absolutely hate it, loathe it. I mean, I'm not going to give them any credit whatsoever. Because it's just money and it's plastic.
Well, on that note, I can't really change the subject very well, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Arsene Wenger's got a quote from 2007. We need to move on to a mobile phone quote, which Mike's going to read out because I can't.
Okay, this came up, I believe, from a Telegraph article published recently, and it says the year was 2007, and Wenger was being asked to explain the philosophy for the next stage of his career. He said, "When we decided to build the stadium, I wanted to anticipate the possibility of financial restrictions, so I concentrated on youth. I also felt the best way to create an identity with the way we play football, to get players integrated into our culture with our beliefs, our values, was to get them as young as possible and to develop them together. I felt it would be an interesting experiment to see players grow together with these qualities and with a love for the club. It was an idealistic vision of the world of football."
Idealistic kind of sums it up for me, and obviously he didn't pay any heed to what Alan Hansen said, you don't win anything with kids. Manchester United obviously proved him wrong, but that was back then. Now perhaps it's truer than it ever was at that stage. I mean,
so
what's everyone else saying?
It's a manager to give, really. I mean, that's the quote you give after you've undertaken that experiment and you've just won the European Cup for the third time in a row. To give that quote, if that's 2007, that's after, well, the 2 years in which he ritually dismantled the Invincibles team, invested a lot in inadequate youth, and, you know, Chelsea and Manchester United seemed to be in the ascendancy, and we were stagnating or dare I say, regressing. Yeah, it was a very peculiar thing to say, and... It kind of gives the impression that we being the paying public fans, customers, wherever we are in the 21st century, have been the outside observers of some freakish sporting experiment, which is fine if I get to, you know, opt in and opt out, but not for £1,200 a year. That's a disgraceful show of, you know, contempt by the manager.
When did Wenger say that?
2007, apparently.
I wonder whether he still thinks so now.
Well, I think the fact that he was admitting that he was basically experimenting and he was taking a huge gamble with our club.
Yeah.
You know, let's not forget it is our club.
Being kind of Dr. Frankenstein.
And you know, if he pulled it off, it would have been, as we've said on countless occasions, it would have been his greatest achievement, no question. And you could argue he's come close.
But he hasn't come close enough. Didn't he have to go down that route though, because there was no money because of the stadium?
Well, possibly there was. I mean, that's what he's suggesting.
But at the time, we weren't told that. We were told he had money to spend, and he wasn't spending it for whatever reason he had, and we didn't know what it was.
You know, did he have to go down that route? Was there really no alternative? you know, okay, we couldn't have gone out and bought a £10 million player, but you could have gone out and bought in experienced players. You could have not got rid of experienced players. You know, the likes of Gilberto and Flamini, you know, that you still got to look back on that and say,
Flamini in particular.
I mean, Flamini's, you know, I mean, he's not done much in Milan, but he could still do a job for us.
The Wenger was let go for no money coming in.
There was that
Flamini,
Diarra,
£5 million, £20 million player, he was.
Three players.
I know Diarra. We could have kept hold of him, and we just let him go for next to nothing.
Again, what wouldn't you give to have Flamini and Diarra playing for us next year?
No, you had the three of them, didn't you? At the start of January that year, we had Diarra, we had Flamini, we had Gilberto. 6 months later, we had none of them.
Yeah.
And that's where it began to go.
I mean, Gilberto's playing in Greece, so I wouldn't necessarily want him back. As good as he's been for Arsenal,
they could have done another year,
maybe, but I'm not sure. I thought his last season at Arsenal was very poor, me personally, and I could see why Arsene let him go. Yeah. I could see that. But in the case of Diarra, I thought he had a lot more to offer. I really did, and I just couldn't understand. I knew that he wasn't happy with the lack of playing time, but I still thought we should have held on to him.
Flamini, I mean, what would we give to have him back now?
I know. Flamini,
in some ways, is the one I excuse him on, because I think you know the last year he was there, he had a good year. But if you'd have asked me the previous summer, should we keep him?
Yeah.
He's about to go to Birmingham, wasn't he?
Should we give him a new contract at 50 grand a week?
That was probably because Wenger never played him that previous season.
And in the wrong position. Typical Wenger.
I think he did play some games, and I don't think he was good enough. But, you know, he came on in that last season, he had a fantastic season. You know, and then I don't blame him for wanting to leave and make the most of it. That was his opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, I don't necessarily blame
him. But we should have stuck a decent contract. Under, you know, put a decent contract on the table, even if it was in the final year, and then you made your mistake. Okay, we're going to have to pay you more, Flamini, because you've had a great season, and you're worth he's worth at least 60,000 a week.
Yeah, well, that's at least.
I bet he didn't get offered 60,000 a week.
No, it was sheer naivety on the part of the club. I mean, the guy's name is Flamini. That's not a French name; it's an Italian name. I know it's an Italian name because he was born in Milan. By a father who was an AC Milan fan. He grew up in Milan watching AC Milan before moving to France at the age of 10.
So he was definitely
going to
go.
He's a naturalised Frenchman. For the club to act all surprised when he then ups and leaves when AC Milan come knocking, offering him three times his salary, it's fucking stupid. And again, you know, same with Edu. Fell out with him over £5 grand a week. Ashley Cole fell out with him over £5 grand a week. You know, we haven't got anybody who knows how to do business at our football club, which is hopefully what Ivan Gazidis has been brought in to do. We have Keith Edelman, who was a property developer, the 874-year-old Ken Fryer, who I'm pretty certain is kept alive in a cryogenic chamber somewhere, doing business for us. Wenger's got to sort out the football side and the business side. And, you know, there was three very dark years for Arsenal Football Club. We didn't know our arse from our elbow.
I agree totally. I couldn't have said it better myself.
And praise indeed from the Hybrid Spy.
Yeah.
And we're not going to agree totally, I'm sure, on who's going to win the World Cup to finalise things.
I think we might. I don't know.
I haven't even thought. I'm not going to say anything at this stage.
I think it's between Spain and Brazil. I can't see anyone else deserving to win it.
No. Football's a very simple game. Two teams battle it out for 90 minutes and then Germany win on penalties.
And you know what happened? One team
and no one said England yet.
No, correct.
And I'm not going to do
England
that.
England are out after the group stage. We're going over the middle of the group
stage. We'll get past the group stage.
Oh, I wouldn't be so sure.
I think
typical media are just overplaying it and saying USA, well, they don't even play football.
We could lose that one.
And I could see us not winning it.
Yeah.
Is it Algeria we've got?
Yeah, Algeria, Slovenia.
Yeah, and I mean, Algeria, did they knocked out Ivory Coast, didn't they, and the African nations?
They knocked out Egypt in the playoff, Egypt won the African Nations Cup.
Yeah, so that's how, you know, I don't think they're any mugs yet. We're treating them as mugs. And Slovenia probably had one of the best records in the qualifying group.
Wouldn't it be brilliant if we didn't qualify for the group stage?
Well, that's it. I said to someone last week, you know, somebody was sort of trying to wind me up going to England, you know, they're going to really struggle. And I say, I'll take more delight out of John Terry or Frank Lampard missing the crucial penalty than I would if England won the World Cup. And I really mean that.
I would definitely.
They're a despicable bunch, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Does that make us traitors because we're not supporting England?
Probably, but hey, you know, Tower of London's only just down the road, we're popping on the way out.
Yeah, yeah. What do you reckon, though?
There's a report on the Guardian website today that England's players have decided to give up their fees for the World Cup to a children's charity, you know, which is a very nice thing to do.
So yeah, they issued a press release with a quote from John Terry to say, people think us footballers live in a bubble, but you know, some of us grew up on housing estates in Peckham and in Battersea. Apparently, after that, John Terry went out and bought two new 4x4s for his wife and one for himself.
I don't think you're joking there.
No, not at all. Not without the slightest hint of irony.
Yeah. So what do you reckon, John?
I'm going for Spain. I might mention Spain. I'm going for Spain. I think Spain won the Euros. Why not? Yeah. Why not the World Cup? They've got the best. They've got the best players in the world. They've got better players than Brazil.
With the climate the way it's going to be, Germany for me. South Africa in July. It's going to be like playing in Northern or Western Europe in sort of November, December time. So I'd say. So you look at sort of Spain, Italy, France, and Germany.
It's
going to be nippy.
Take your jumper, Kev.
It's not going to be gloves weather, is it, surely?
It's going to be about 16, 17 degrees.
That's all right. That's English summertime.
No, Germany for me. Although, they're really going to miss Ballack. But it's time for Bastian Schweinsteiger, which translates as pig mounter. Bastian Schweinsteiger to stand up and show that he is one of the greatest midfielders in European football.
And we're not interested in him.
He's from Munich, plays for Bayern Munich. I don't think he'll be going anywhere. We can't afford him.
But no, we can't afford anyone, can we?
No, he wants paid in cash.
Sad. Every good player you ever think in the world, every good player in world football, you think, wouldn't mind him, Arsenal can't afford him. Why is that?
Because we haven't got the money. I think that'll be it.
But it's a happy note to end on.
Right, the big question is, and there's no particular reason for this, it's just been on my mind for a while. If Arsene Wenger did leave the club, who would take his place? Because it's all very well saying Wenger out, or sign someone, or sign off. But what does that mean? I mean, who would we get?
I'm sort of on record, in some places anyway, as saying that I don't want Wenger to go this summer. I'm happy to give him another year for all he's done. But I think, you know, things don't change in a year's time. It will be time for change. In a year's time, and I know this probably seems quite fanciful, I would quite like Guardiola to come in. Now, people are going to go, why would he ever leave Barcelona? And I can see the logic, and I needed to be convinced, but I've got a Spanish friend who sort of said, I could see it happening. I really could see him managing Arsenal in the not-too-distant future. And there has been rumours in the Spanish press that he will not stay there long-term. And part of the reason for that is, one, he obviously had last season where he had a fantastic season, delivered everything. He's not done too badly this year with the league, although I'm sure that's not quite up to scratch as far as Barcelona are concerned. But he loves the club. And the pressure out there is so intense that at some point, whether it's next season or the season after, the press will start to turn on him. And I think he'll want to jump ship before that happens and before it gets nasty and before he loses that love for the club. So in a year's time, come over and take over from Arsene Pep. We'll have you. And if you can persuade us to carry on for another few years here, that all works into the bargain for me.
And it's all about philosophy of football as well. Guardiola has got a similar philosophy, right? To the Arsenal philosophy.
I mean, in terms of a reason for him to leave Barcelona at the end of next season, it's that Real Madrid are going to have a better manager than Barcelona are going to have when Mourinho inevitably leaves Internazionale in the summer. He won't lose the two games against Barcelona, quite simply, and that's when you'll sort of see the Catalan press turn on Guardiola. The other thing that sort of counts in our favour from a sex point of view is that his favourite player growing up and the guy that he was assigned to clean the boots of when he was a kid at Barcelona was Pep Guardiola. So Wenger leaves at the end of next year and Guardiola takes over solely on the Premier, only if Cesc is willing to stay and stand by me, then, you know, things might work out.
Okay. And it could stop Arshavin leaving as well if we got Pep into the Arsenal setup.
Maybe it'll stop Danielson from leaving.
wouldn't that be sad?
If I could take Fabregas and whoever and anyone else in the squad leaves, I'd be quite happy with that.
So what about you, Steve? What's your take on that?
I love Mourinho. I mean, we're never going to get Mourinho because the board are so.
Why are they so anti Mourinho?
I don't know, but. I think...
Is it because he wins things and we're against
him? Yeah, he wins things. It's common, everyone thinks he's going to go to Real Madrid in the summer. But, why don't we throw our hat in the ring? Why don't we just say, right, come to us. You can take on Ancelotti. You can take on Chelsea. You can prove to them that they should never have got rid of you. You know, next year we'll do the double. And then Mourinho can say, you should never got rid of me. I don't care whether he says that or not. Mm-hmm. We'll have two extra trophies. He'll grow to see Arsenal as his domain. And I just would love to have Mourinho.
He wouldn't take a job in London.
He hasn't lost a home game for 8 years, and I fancy some of that, you know, particularly when it comes to Chelsea and United. But also, playing a little silly little punt here, given that Arsene Wenger's got absolutely no passion, no tactical nous, he never kind of has a go at, well, he has a go at referees and things like that, but, you know, I wouldn't mind an English manager, Neil Warnock, for one season only.
Oh, no.
Let Neil and Harry go head to head with a bit of money, give him a bit of money, give him the reins at a top four club like Arsenal, and then just say, right, Neil, you know, make us better than Chelsea. See how you get on.
Sure, because Enis would like it when we sell Vermaelen for 15 million and replace him with Chris fucking Morgan on a free transfer.
Well, look at he's only ever operating within his budget. If he had money to spend, it'd be a totally different kettle of fish, like Harry. Everyone said that about Harry before he went to Spurs. Now he's gone to Spurs.
I'm not sure, because Neil Warnock's not really renowned as a great Palace football coach. He's not a great football coach. He's great for quotes. Motivator. Unbelievable for quotes.
Well, I'll tell you what, then, let's get him in with Arsene Wenger as the motivator. Get him in as the new Pat Rice.
If you gave him a 5-minute job every week,
yeah,
and you really wanted to get the players fired up, well, maybe Warnock's there's a role for him.
Absolutely.
But I'm not too
Please
sure myself.
Tell me we're not seriously talking about Neil Warnock at Arsenal.
I'm the only one who would want him, I'll tell you.
Yeah,
if you want a manager whose name is a perfect anagram of Colin Wanker to be our new manager, then please be my guest.
He is the man for that.
Well, do you know what? I'm not too sure. I mean, I've got so little confidence in Arsene Wenger that if it was Neil Warnock next year, it would make a blind bit of difference to me.
Your first call, though, Mourinho, that was, to me, that was a really good shout.
Yeah, saying you want Mourinho as Arsenal manager is like asking, you know, who do you want Wenger to go out and buy this? I mean, you say, oh, yeah, well, Beckenbauer 74, Pele 68, and Cruyff 76. It's not going to happen. Mourinho's not going to manage a team in direct geographical rivalry to Chelsea. He'll take the Manchester.
Why is that? Do you think there's a technical reason? Legal reason?
No, because they're in direct geographical rivalry to
Chelsea. Yeah, he hates Chelsea. He hates the idea that Chelsea sacked him.
Did you hear what he said? When he was asked the question, are you happy that Chelsea won the league? His answer was, I am very good friends with Sir Alex Ferguson, and then he digressed and eventually said, but I still know some people at Chelsea, so I'm kind of happy. But initially, he was suggesting that he wasn't actually that happy that Chelsea won the league. When he was asked the question.
They didn't beat one single big team.
Well, tell you what, guys, I'll put this on the record now. If Jose Mourinho ever becomes manager of Arsenal, I'll pay off both your mortgages. It's not going to happen.
I think you're right.
Would you like it, though?
No, not at all.
I would like it personally, because I know we'd win trophies with Jose Mourinho at the helm. We will definitely win trophies with Mourinho
at this stage of the game, that's all that matters.
We would play terrible football, and a lot of the people that are watching games wouldn't want to renew their season tickets.
I can reconcile winning trophies with just his ego. His ego, we said earlier that, you know, Wenger should not be bigger than the club. Mourinho is bigger than any club he is at in his mind.
Mm.
And I'm not sure I'd be happy with that. You know, after the when they beat Barcelona in the Nou Camp, you know, he didn't go up and congratulate his players. The camera was on him and he made sure it was on him. He ran across the pitch.
I don't think Arsenal big enough for him is another point. I mean, his next two jobs... Well, his next three jobs will be Real Madrid, followed by Manchester United, followed by the Portugal national team, all three of which he'll choose when he wants to take them, and then he'll retire.
Man United?
Yeah.
You think you'll go there?
Yeah. But, yeah. Because, okay, they might be in direct rivalry to Chelsea, but they're not in the same city. And secondly, they're probably four times the club Chelsea were, are, and always will be.
So what's the problem that Arsenal got with Mourinho? Is it because of Wenger? Because he called Wenger a voyeur?
Said it twice. Yeah. We're in London. They're in London.
Yeah, but that's not a good enough reason. You get players going from City to United in Manchester.
I'll tell you what, when you two are on the phone to Mourinho's agent saying, him not wanting to come to London because we're in the same city as Chelsea is not good.
The only reason I can think of, that he wouldn't do that is purely contractual. Because when he left Chelsea, it was under some sort of cloud, and perhaps it was in his contract he had to keep quiet about everything that happened at Chelsea, and maybe there was a clause in the contract when he finalised his deal there that said that he couldn't go to Arsenal. So but do you think the chances of that is high or low?
The contract is enforceable under European law because it's a
restraint of trade.
But could Chelsea get away with it?
No.
No.
No, okay. It's an unenforceable agreement. He will not go to Arsenal because they are Chelsea City rivals. And he has got an affinity with Chelsea, the football club, and the fans.
The fans, yeah.
Also, if you've got a bunch of 40,000 manic National Front racists on your side, you don't want to piss them off.
Yeah, I'll take your point.
There's a chance, you know, his kids might go missing. But, you know, if he goes to Manchester United, it's far enough away, things might be okay.
That's almost as silly as what I just said about Neil Warnock.
Lovely people, Chelsea fans, aren't
I'm not so sure people. It is that silly.
Last time I went to Stamford Bridge, those nice Chelsea fellows provided me with Chelsea souvenir darts, Chelsea souvenir twopenny pieces, and Chelsea souvenir bottles of piss. Yeah, they're gorgeous people.
Right, on that note.
Right, so that's why Mourinho won't be joining Arsenal as the manager then.
In case you're wondering, Kike Sanchez Flores for me. He's manager of Atletico Madrid. He took over at the start, about 8 games into this season, when they were bottom of the table with 1 point. Took them up to 7th in the league in UEFA Cup final. They knocked the ball around really well, and he's done that with a team that contains Diego Forlan and Jose Antonio Reyes.
Oh.
And he managed to get £2 million for Maxi Rodriguez.
Got a CV.
It's not a bad CV, is it?
Yeah.
No, okay, let's have him then.
Somebody said that about Almunia, though. Sorry, I had to chuck that in.
We have exclusive footage taken from the Arsenal team bus on the trip away to Blackburn. Unfortunately, owing to a scheduling conflict and a sore throat, the part of Pat Rice will be played by former leader of the DUP, Sir Ian Paisley.
My babies, they killed my babies.
Your babies, they killed your babies, boss.
This is not football, this is barbarism.
That wasn't football, boss, they're all barbers, boss.
Look at poor Fabianski, will he ever walk again?
I can't see him catching anything again, that's for sure, boss.
Why did they chop his hands off? Was the assault that bad?
I know, boss, the ref didn't even see it was a free kick, boss.
How can they expect me to win the league playing with these rules?
We could try sending an actual goalkeeper, boss.
What has defence got to do with the beautiful game? I'm only interested in art.
They don't give out points or trophies for artistic interpretation, boss.
They are Neanderthals. We will win this league my way, as we have done for the last 13 years.
You what, boss?
These fools, they don't know what a real trophy is.
Right, boss, if you say so. Hang on, I think Sylvester's dead.
I told you so many times Allardyce's players went over the top.
I know, boss. It looks like we'll only be able to give poor Mikhail only an extra 1 year in his deal.
Take care of it tomorrow, please, Patrick.